members, we have also changed our process. On Wednesday, we decided to split the annual report of tax, which dealt with change programs, and then we check on what we with the finances next week, Wednesday, financial statement of tax. A valid indication that I encourage members to send in technical documents to the office of the chairperson. No, we speak on this. This is the annual report. There's no way. I understand about the 16. But the 16 will speak. This is an annual report. We can't. There's nothing that we can do. We must speak and deal with the Senate of Parliament. We speak then in the introduction. Thank you very much. I'm sure we asked the media with guys from the ICC. We have become part of Parliament. As I have indicated that we are going to deal with only two problems, but as expected, we have the entire ICD annual report presentation here. This is one after the last one, after the finances, but we are not going to deal with the other two. We are dealing with only two. and also the concerns that have been raised by this conference in 2005, of which Valoi and Tabalala were part of that team that came to Parliament. It is a great improvement that it is. I went through the report and I am convinced that the ICD is taking us somewhere. By so saying then, I'm not saying that all is good. I'm not saying that all is good. But I think you are trying your best. And also on the issue of us leaving with the National Treasure to consider the request of the establishment of more satellite offices. I think it will be of a great assistance to yourself and also to the people of this country who need that kind of support. Let me then give over to you, Izzy, to take us through your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee, ladies and gentlemen. Once more, it's our great appreciation to be before this committee to present our annual report for the 2006 and 7 financial year. Indeed, Honorable Members, the financial year 2006 and 7 was the better year for the ICD. If we compare with its predecessor, the ICD is pleased to inform this honorable committee that we have tried very hard indeed to put more efforts to improve the output of the department compared to the previous years. And since today, the honorable committee has requested us to come and do presentation for only two components, which is problem one and problem two. Allow me, honorable members, to a little bit indeed highlight some of our achievements as far as the problem one is concerned. It is our pleasure to say that there was indeed greater improvement as far as this problem was concerned, in the sense that many of the issues which was of greater concern in the previous financial year have indeed been attended to. For example, the issue of the vacant rate in the ICD. It's a pleasure to say that we managed to decrease it from 9% to 5.2% in this financial year we are talking about, and that indeed is a great achievement. We have also managed to open the debt protection in that program, which was a concern of the Solicitor General, and it is indeed running smoothly as we are speaking now. And as far as the issue of our staff retention, we are glad to say that we have managed to implement the increase of salaries from the money which this honorable committee has assisted us in the session of the National Treasury, and we have taken care of our investigating officer. Therefore, I hope the view that we are indeed addressing the issue of supplication, which salaries was one issue, which is a solid issue, and we are paying attention to accordingly. And it is also mixed with the said feelings and happiness, and also inform the Honorable Committee about the resignation of about two of our provincial aides. The provincial aides of KwaZulu-Natal resigned in the sense that she also got involved within our government. She is now with the Director of Public Prosecution in Gauteng. She is based in Pretoria, Advocate Lassi. And again, I announce the resignation of the provincial aid of housing with Alfredine Jenica. She has also resigned, but she's still within the government. She secured the post as the chief executive officer in the Eastern Cape, the provincial government, in the Lika Board. And she has already assumed the executive there. And in that tone, I also, however, to say that both their posts have been advertised. And as far as the KZN is concerned, we have already conducted interviews there, and as far as the interview has proceeded, we are hopeful that by the 1st of thing while the person will be doing teaching. And for housing, we are going to conduct interviews on 12th of November this year. And we're going to program one honorable member. You remember that when we came here this year, we had mentioned the issue of the backlog, that there was some problem with the backlog. But we managed indeed to make a dent there, because from the national office we formed what we call a task team, which we managed to deploy to projects which appear to be having the highest backlog, such as Mpumalanga. And the task team spent about four days there to attend strictly to the issue of the backlog. And I'm glad to say that when they returned to national office, they had the indeed the money to demolish the backlog to a great extent. And that is what, as an ICD, we are planning to do, that this task team is going to be deployed to various procedural offices in order to specifically attend to the issues of backlog. And again, the issue, as I've already mentioned, our investigation officers are heavy up to so far, because our territorial issue obtained them are competitive with the other government departments as far as the national is concerned. And we, as the ICD, we are very much grateful to the commitment which has been shown by this committee in supporting us in most of our achievements, because we cannot only grow our own traffic, we very much appreciate and know that it was through your efforts and guidance that we have managed to make a turnaround as far as this annual report which we are about to present today. And we are saying the following, that with your assistance, we are quite sure that indeed we can make more improvement on this financial report as it stands today. And as far as the issue of Accra's president already been alluded by some of the chairperson, if you look at our annual report, you agree that below that qualification, the Auditor General has specifically said in paragraph 2 that after they have done this audit, they are satisfied and aware that the ICD has indeed taken steps to attend to this issue in question, and that is exactly what we've done. It's unfortunate that we cannot turn back the clock, that qualification is there. But if I had the power to bring them back today, I wouldn't have that qualification in my department. And we are doing more to make sure that we do not have what is called qualification in our financial reports. With these few words, honorable members of this committee, allow me to pass the baton to my deputies to present to you our annual report. I thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members, I'm going to be presenting to you the annual report with regards to Program 1 of this administration. I thought it would be a great help to indicate to the committee the staffing status of the ICD at the end of the financial year. As can be seen on that slide, Chairperson, the acquisition of staff components of the ICD looked as extends on the slide there. We still have the so-called three big offices in terms of numbers there. We see that Gauteng had 22 at the end of financial year sub members, and then Western Cape had 20 and KZN had 20. I also want to indicate, Chairperson, that with the increment that we got this financial year, as the ED has indicated, there's going to be a growth of about 7%. That translates to 17 positions. And that is a great improvement, and we really appreciate that. It's going to make a lot of difference in the department. And the second slide, Chairperson, indicates further the distribution of positions in both head office and the provincial offices. 65% of the positions that we had during the financial year were obtaining in the provincial offices, and 35% of the positions are at national office, and the total there is 251. And with this new increase of the position that we received, of the additional staff that we received. For this financial year, we're going to be having a total of 248 personnel, with 32% of those obtaining in head office, and 67%, which is 165, at our provincial offices, where our work is actually happening. Chairperson, the third slide indicates the employment equity of the department, because we require the department to comply with the national legislation in terms of employment equity. We have indicated the gender distribution of personnel per office. At national office, where we had 69 employees, we had 32 males and 37 females. Counting, we had 13 males and 9 females. I'm not going to be wasting time, Chairperson, there. What is important, what I can indicate then, is that in total, we had 54% representing male employees in the ICD, and then 46% representing female employees in the ICD. The only office which actually came to a balance, a proper balance in terms of gender distribution, is KZN, which had 50% males and 50% females. Also, Limpopo was not very far because it had 9 and 8 there. We're hoping that as time goes on, we'll be able to come closer to 50-50 in terms of the entire organization. The next line, Chairperson, is a further distribution of the personnel in terms of race. The last column, the last horizontal column there, Chairperson, indicates the percentage of the different of employees of different color. There we had 43% as African males, 3% as colored males, 4% as Indian and white, and 5% as white males. And then 6% as African females, and 7% as colored females, and 3% as Indian females, and 5% as white females. The next slide, Chairperson, indicates the cases, the misconduct cases that we had as a department. We had about 20 misconduct cases. The bulk of these cases, as can be seen, Chairperson, were in the area of abusing of emails by employees in the department. We put a policy in the department which prohibits people to misuse emails. And the bulk of the charges there were the watching of pornography, so that is not allowed in the department. So we had to deal with those cases, because it is actually a translation of a departmental policy. The first one up there, Chairperson, it's a case of one investigator in Gauteng who decided to stay away from work for 30 days without leave, without any approval from the head of the office there. So in terms of the national policies, if a person stays for 30 days without leave or permission, it's automatic dismissal. So we dismiss that person, although he appealed to the minister, and then the minister contacted with us that it should be dismissed. The abuse of the vehicle, Chairperson, we had two employees there. Those were investigators who actually abused the vehicle. They would, instead of going where they're supposed to be going, they would drive the vehicle and go elsewhere. We have got what we call trackers in our state vehicles. So we're able to trace at any given moment where a particular vehicle is. So at the end of every day, you are able to draw a report from the system. And if we have a reason to suspect that a particular investigator did not actually go where it's supposed to go, we're going to consult those reports. And I'm happy to announce that one of them, I'm told, has already resigned on his own after he discovered that we were actually on his tracks. So that is what we have done with those people who have been abusing state vehicles. The abuse of power refers to one provincial head, the provincial head in Mpumalanga, who conducted interviews, and then we had candidates. He did not employ the first candidate, neither did he employ the second candidate. He took the fourth candidate. So without reason, we didn't know why he had to jump the other three candidates who had performed better than the first candidates. And we charged him, and he has been suspended without pay, but now he's back. The abuse of email, I've spoken to the chairperson. Absence without leave, those people who just don't come to work without leave. So we also have charged those people. In total, we have claimed to that case. The vacancy status, chairperson, as it has indicated, I'll say to by the end of the financial year, we had about 10 vacant positions, which represent 5.2%, and the vacancies per program were, as you can see on the slide, we had 5 vacancies on program 1, program 2 we had 2 vacancies, and then program 3 we had 5 vacancies. But chairperson, I can also indicate that now, for this financial year, up to the end of October, the vacancies have risen to 19. The next slide, chairperson, indicates the reasons why staff leave the department. When people leave the department, we conduct what we call exit interviews to try and find out what it is that people are complaining about, and what is it that is driving people away from the department. And we discovered that of the 43 people who left the department during the financial year, 14 of them left the department, resigned to join the private sector. And the reasons that they gave all of them was that the salaries are low. So they've been offered better salaries in those private sector organizations. And then the other one is the one that I spoke about, the one that we have dismissed because of staying away from work. And the other 28% got transferred to other government departments. And the reason why they went there, they also got promotions. And these are cases where a person at level, maybe level 9, which is an assistant director, will get a position as a director, and we're unable to counter or to stop them because we don't have positions to put them in, or we don't have money to stop them from going. So all of those have been transferred to other government departments. So then, in total, we lost 46 people during the financial year. Chairperson, the challenges that we're facing as a program are as listed there on the slide. The first challenge that we have is the one that I just referred to, the losing of the 43 employees in the financial year, which represented 18% of our staff component. The ICD, chairperson, is trying as much as possible to fill vacancies. But then the situation that we find ourselves is a vicious cycle because you appoint a person today, another one leaves tomorrow. You appoint another person leaves tomorrow. It becomes a vicious cycle, appearing as if we're not filling the positions as fast as we can, but I can assure this committee that we're trying our level best. That's the reason why at the end of the initial year we had that low rate of vacancy. The other challenge that we're facing as a department is lack of growth, because that is what a lot of people are complaining about. They're leaving the department, some of them, because there's no growth in the department. If a person is looking at the position elsewhere, there's no way you can stop a person from going because you don't have a position to put a person into, because the organization is flat. It's very, very, very small. So it's a challenge that is going to be with us for some time. It has been there. We just praying that at some point we'll be able to, the department will be able to grow so we can retain our staff as we wish. The other challenge, chairperson, is the ED position, which has been vacant. Now this is going to be the third year that this position is vacant. Now, the extent to which it affects the program is that every year there's a saving in salaries because the acting executive director is only paid an acting allowance, not the full salary of an ED. So what happens is that at the end of every year, we have a saving in personnel. And this is what the National Treasurer has been complaining about, to say, you always have savings on personnel, but you come to us and tell us you want money for more staff, but you put savings. But the savings that we're generating, the greater part of the savings comes from the executive council of the ED. And what happens is that at the end of the year, machine that fits into the services. We need the money for things that we have wanted to have if we had sufficient funds, like maybe buying furniture or buying of stalls and other things. It is a great concern because every year we're facing a problem with the treasury in this regard. The other challenge, Chairperson, is the high travel cost in terms of S&T due to the long distances that our employees, that our visitors are traveling. I think when the CFO comes in here, I think she'll be able to give figures in that respect. But it is actually a challenge, Chairperson, because of the vastness of the provinces. So this program may be seen at times to be overspending in terms of traveling allowances because our employees have to travel long distances to go and attend to things. The other problem that we're having, I reported the other time when I came for this committee that we have the services of an organization called ICARES, it's one which all departments to try and run with the employee wellness in the department. And that organization is generating reports on a monthly basis. Which reports we use as management to assess the level of motivation of our employees. And what we're finding from these reports is that a lot of our employees are burnt out, they're stressed because of high workload, especially investigators. They will tell you that we can't cope anymore. Charging a lot, or not always at home because of some differences. But then I think with the living increase that we're getting, and what they've done is it is indicated, would actually help to motivate them. But then it's a short-lived kind of an intervention because we need to open some type of offices if we can, so that they should be able to charge short distances. So they should be able to get time for their families and their children. The other challenge that we're facing, Chairperson, is the segregation of duties in finance and SAM. SAM is supply chain management. Supply chain management is the old procurement section. Now the new term now is called supply chain management. That is the area where we also got a qualification last year in terms of the assets, Chairperson. Because we do not have a unit that specifically deals with assets, we're using people in procurement to deal with assets, and that's not how it should be in terms of the policy. But then the bigger problem is that you should be having one person dealing with one area, not one person dealing with procurement, receiving and dispensing of those things. So, but as the EDS indicated, we're not just sitting on a lot of straight, what can we do? We use the services of intense. We try to improvise within the department. And as a result, I can vouch for this committee that we're not going to get a qualification by the area even this year. We're going to be trying our level best to improvise and see what we can do. In terms of performance, Chairperson, I just want to highlight a few issues that the program has achieved as the indicators. We have managed to establish a data section in finance. And this is one area, Chairperson, where we had a qualification as well. Remember, the Auditor General had concerns regarding the clearing of this allowance account, which was not cleared for a long time. So with the additional money that we got the previous financial year, we managed to establish a data section last year, this financial year. And I can indicate that things are going very well there. We've cleared all the debt there, so I'd like to already extend. And we have also been able to clear the miscellaneous disallowance account. And as I've indicated, in the area of assets where there were problems, we have been able to complete the unique numbering of assets at head office. And but before the end of this financial year, we'll be finalizing what will be done for the provincial offices as well. Before the Auditor General comes, we have done that. We have been able to launch the service delivery chart of the department. We have been able to send our new employees, about 40 of them, to the induction program. It's an area where we have been lagging for the past financial year. We have also been able to upgrade all our secretarial salaries from level 4 to 5, as directed by DPSA, we have also been able to address all the AG's concerns regarding leave. This house, we remember that the other time when I came in, we had problems with the management of leave. We have been able to come up with registers there. We have been able to synchronize the system in the provincial office, the national office. We have also been able to come up with the SNS supply chain management policy, which the Auditor General was worried about. And we have been able to train people in that unit with regard to that policy. And also the human resource plan, which the Auditor General was worried about, we have been able to align it with the public service regulation because there's been a clause there which did not actually address in our human resource plan. As the EDS indicated, we've updated the investigator salaries. We have been able to open 2 social offices in Tata and Richards Bay. We have managed to send 175 employees on different training courses during the year, and we have been able to evaluate 101 jobs in compliance with the DPSA prescripts. We have identified priorities for the program for the coming financial year, Chairperson. As I've indicated, we went to the initial stage at this financial year to ask for more money to open the asset management unit, and we'll be able to open to have at least 2 people in there who will be able to deal with assets, specifically with assets, so that we shouldn't be having any qualification again. And then those positions, we had requested 3 positions, one asset manager and asset management, and 1 senior asset manager, an officer, and 2 asset management. But then we have not been able to get money to employ those, but at least 2 of those will be able to come on board. We also want to strengthen our provincial offices in Program 1 to deal with assets and general administration, because in some of the provinces, you only have 1 person in Program 1 in administration. This 1 person deals with administration, deals with cars, deals with finance, deals with human resource management issues, deals with leave. So it's actually a problem, and the problem that we're facing is that those people are not able to take leave, because if that person takes leave, then there's nobody to deal with issues on Program 1. There's nobody to deal with procurement, to deal with cars. So we are saying if we can also get at least 1 person, 2 people in each province, so they can relieve each other when the other one goes on leave or the other one falls sick. We also hope to be able to operationalize the transition of the 31 monitor positions from the program, from Program 3 into investigator positions by January 2008. This initiative which the President ED came up with have been sent to the Minister for approval, the restructuring, in terms of looking at getting additional personnel for our investigators. And I think last month or so, the Minister has approved our proposal to do this kind of restructuring. So what we have done, what we're going to be doing now, must run with the process of consultation, because now that the Minister has approved, we need to consult with the people who are involved. We must also consult with the unions. We're going to be having a meeting, I think, the first week of November. We're going to be consulting with them and the unions to indicate to them that this restructuring is not going to affect them in any way. They're going to lose anything, they're still going to retain their salaries. In fact, what is going to happen, they're going to benefit them, because now they'll be qualifying for land allowance, paid by allowance. And they can also, if they qualify and if money is available, they can also apply for like subsidized vehicles and so on. So it's a process which we must embark on before we actually start implementing it. So we're hoping that if this process goes well, we're going to be beefing up our investigation capacity at the beginning of next financial year. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if I expect it, but I can hand over to the next project manager.
Members, you have program 2 at this station in the store, dear Magad. You have program 2? You all have program 2? Yeah, but you're not taking program 2 now. We are going to engage with this program first, with administration, after which then we'll take program 2. You had the presentation. The presenter was very clear. I think now I'll be guided by you. I've recognized Mr. Desogwe, Honorable Boy, Van Veek, Jabu, and Mr. Tedial, and then we take second base of his after them. Honorable Sogwe?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe even before I ask my question, one should appreciate and commend and encourage the good work that was done prior to, I mean, after our departure in the last meeting. It should be encouraged and commended. My question will be, experience has shown in the previous administration, especially in the Bantustan, even if you pump as much money as you want to satisfy staff, in the Bantustan during the apartheid era, the staff just couldn't perform, much as they were being given adequate funds, adequate resources. I would just want to find out, how do you view the conditions of work as an organization in terms of the conditions physically, in terms of the information and knowledge and education of the staff, in terms of the relationship between the staff, respect with the seniority, relationship between the seniority, the senior, and the subordinates. Basically, the functioning of the organogram within the organization. How do you view that? Because I'm worried about the huge migration of the staff out of ICT into other sectors. Now, you continue to train people. You continue to lose them. In spite of the fact that you would think financially they are being given adequate enough, but you continue to lose, like you are saying, it's a red cycle. So how do you view your conditions of work? In spite of the condition, I mean, in spite of the problems we faced in the past, how do you then view your conditions of work as I stated? Thanks.
Hello, boy.
Thank you. I also want to maybe follow in the step of the chairperson to say there is quite a lot of improvement in how the ICD has reported itself. We must say you have finally been able to understand your own mandate, and that means at the policy level, you are giving a good impression that you do understand, but there's quite still a number of technical stuff that we need to be able to deal with too, so that we could be able to help you to continue to improve. But we are quite satisfied that you do understand your mandate. You have read what is your mandate, and you've been able to report according to your own mandate, which is a very good improvement to what you used to get confronted with at the Malak of information that you couldn't be able to sort out which one belongs where. But there's a hell of an improvement. You must say, acting, so that you are doing a very good job. If I had the capacity to give you a bonus, I would give you a bonus by today. But I don't have that capacity. But we do have areas of concern that we need to continuously express. It seems as if there's a hell of an improvement also in the relationship between the police and the ICD, which give us a sense that you are able to reflect on how what is happening in relation to matters of policy now, and how we could be able to assist each other in improving in combating crime. But do you have the capacity internally as the ICT to deal with the different mandates that you have? Are you able to match the police? If you can't, how do you think you're going to improve that type of relationship? Or how do you think you're going to improve that capacity? Because the police are growing year by year. And since ICT is not growing, it's more falling apart. With loss of staff of around 43, it does clearly say to us that we would never be able to match the people that you have to monitor. How do you help us to reach out to that type of targeting? The police are growing, and we are giving them more capacity than you. How do you help us to be able to arrive there? Your retention policy, do you have one? Or is staff running away because you don't have one? The issues that are beginning to outline are related to the type of policy you have. Do we have a policy? I mean, if somebody moves just internally in government from one department to another department, it does mean that the department that you have confidence in, she is no more confident of the leadership. Is it the question of people don't have confidence in the leadership of ICT and then run to other departments? Are you able to pinpoint that type of a situation to us so that we are able to deal with it in a manner that we could be able to assist you? As we say, I mean, like, the stages where really some of the cases that you are suspending people for, it's more of delinquency or lack of interest in the work that they're supposed to be doing. What do we do in relation to this thing? What plans do you have? Without dismissing people, what plans do you have internally to be able to assist people to do and make use of their own time in a better way? Can I leave it at that level now?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Before I take this job, maybe before I forget on that, what Honorable Boy has said, I'm getting very worried at the rate that we are losing your staff. Maybe as the portfolio committee, I think I must think on a way of the portfolio committee visiting your office at national office and in all provinces, where we'll focus on the junior staff members. So we'll have to talk to the junior staff members and hear from them what the problem is before we can lose the entire staff of the ICT. When I'm sitting here and looking at this report and really the issue of the rate that you are losing the staff from your offices is of a great concern. I think time will come for us here to go to your offices, talk to the junior staff members, hear from them how the problem. We might think that the problem is the salary, just to find out the problem is yourself, the managers. Maybe your style of managing does not suit the poor guy on the lower level. So I think we'll have to do that. We did that exercise with other departments previously, other entities previously. We'll have to do the same exercise with the ICT. Otherwise, I don't want to see myself after 2009 and history being written that under myself as a leader and as a chairperson of safety and security, the ICT collapsed. I don't want to see myself under such records. Sister, I just wanted to make that comment. Sister,
thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I was just going to ask the question that Nyami has just asked of capacity, looking at the employees that you lost. So that even the chairperson has just had that question. Another question that I was just going to find out. When on page, what is that, 9 with cases? On the employment equity. We said KZN is 9 males and 9 females. But what happened to the two? Because we said earlier on KZN is having 20. They will be getting 5 in the coming financial year. What happened to the two people? As we said, it's 9-9. That is 18. But yet we are having 20. And is the KZN head already assuming the duties with the NPA. Then the last one, Comrade Chair. Instead of having this accumulating money that you are saving, now you said it's 1.6, and also come back and request money, can't you request to utilize this money rather than coming back to request for money and while you are having the saved money? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yeah, I think while there is improvement and we must welcome that, but I think unfortunately many of the challenges that are identified by the Auditor General as well are reoccurring challenges. They've been there every single year. At least the Chairperson wasn't embarrassed this year when the Auditor General met with the Chairperson, and last year I think he said the worst case that he came across was the ICD. At least that didn't happen this year. She wasn't embarrassed again regarding that. So yes, where there are improvements, I think we should encourage that and be glad for it. But I think also we need to acknowledge the challenges that remain. And I think that what is worrisome is the fact that many of these challenges that remain are in fact reoccurring challenges. And unfortunately, Mr. Baloyi, many of them remain within administration. As we all know, the Auditor General, they don't only look at finances, but they look at the total package. And if you look at his reservations, most of these are around administration. And I think that remains a challenge. Chairperson, my first question is that even though there is a good representation of women within the ICD, it is unfortunate if we start to evaluate the presentation of women that we find that they are basically at supervisory and lower levels. They're not represented at the manager, middle management and senior management level. For instance, only 25% of senior managers are women, and only 41% of middle management. And then when you get to lower levels, suddenly it's 67%. So what I'm trying to say is that we need to look at the fact that we don't inflate artificially our representation of women within the ICD, but basically they are the people answering the telephones and sitting at reception. We want to see women in positions where they are actually going to make a difference. The abuse of email, I would like to know whether the ICT has implemented the Director General of Public Service and Administration's directive of ensuring that firewalls be put up on all the computers, because, I mean, if they did, they shouldn't have 14 people who are actually abusing email and who are watching pornography, etc. I think that directive came out at the end of last year, so if you can just give us an indication on that one. And if not, when are you intending to do so? Chairperson, another question that I have about administration that worries me is, Comrade Nyame has said that, Mr. Goya has said that the ICD have a better understanding of their mandate. And I agree. I think under the acting executive officers, they have been focusing better on their mandates. But I immediately start getting nervous when I see that the monitors are going to become investigators. Not because they are going to become investigators. What I'm getting worried about is what is going to happen to the monitoring function of the ICD. Because the monitoring function remains a very important part of the ICD, and if the ICD is not going to do that, nobody else but this portfolio committee will be doing it, and quite frankly, it's not our main duty. Last comment, Chairperson, and also a question maybe to the CEO, acting CEO more than anybody else. So I think your internal audit committee is really not giving you the support that they should be giving you. If you look at the fact that they are saying they're satisfied with internal processes, leave, etc., etc. But we all know that is the problem. The supply chain management is a problem. The leave, the administration is a problem, as the Auditor General correctly identified. Are you looking at the Internal Audit Committee, and how are you planning? Well, your time is also, I know, limited, but have you, in the process, looked at the Auditing Committee, and how do you plan to beef it up? I think it's quite serious here, when the Auditor General himself says that he basically puts no value to the input of the Internal Auditing Committee. He's basically saying, I'm not even listening to what they're saying. So I just would like to know, what are you planning to do in order to beef up the Internal Audit Committee around their work and duties? Because I think that is a very important body to assist and to strengthen the hands of the CEO. Acting or the permanent CEO, doesn't matter, but we need to know what we're going to do there.
Thank you, Ms. Chan. My question, thank you very much. My question is on people who are suspended without pay. I would like to know whether they are suspended to a particular or specific time. For instance, the abuse of state vehicle, abuse of power, suspended without pay. Any, you know, a specific time for them to return or what? Madam Chair, I have an interest to ask a question, but it's not from here, but it's related to here, arising out from our province. That's a criminal case. Oh, I may raise it when we meet up with the police over there.
I may raise it with myself in my office.
Okay,
so that I can direct it to the right people. Yeah, you raise it with me and then I can direct to the right people. Whatever case it is, yeah. Thank you, Babaji. Let me take all the people who want to say something on this program. So that after these questions, I'll close this program and start with the next program. Dademwaka?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at the 10 other trans-related programs. Probably they are the ones that may lead to people resigning and so on. But in terms of people getting invited for a vacancy, in the application, most institutions will say, we want the person who is prepared to work overtime, who is prepared to work under strenuous or that type of work, they relate to that. And when coming to an interview, the interviewer will always mention the type of the work that you are going to do, and trying to motivate and encourage the person who is taking the job to say that this type of a job you are taking is a challenge. Are you prepared to take it? And if the contract system is used, and which I believe that it should be used, is that in your contract you bind yourself by saying that I'm prepared to take this type of a job. And in time, when one feels that now he's exhausted or they can't take it anymore, he wants to leave, then normally, like what I've seen in South Africa, people who are coaches who have just been fired, they get severance packages. But those who just retire by themselves, they forfeit some of the income. Now, in terms of this contract that are engaged in, what do you do in your employment conditions on people who are resigning in that fashion? Thank you.
I will give over to the management response, and after we should go immediately then into the second program. And also, I am seated here wondering, you complain about the shortage of staff.
I'm longing to see the day when you come here and say that all the vacancies have been fulfilled. Because every time you come down, there is a huge number of vacancies that has not been filled. Previously, we fought with the ICD because of the delay in filling of vacancies. Sometimes it took them something like 2 years before they could fill a vacancy. So I'm getting worried that every time when we deal with the ICD, and then we have this problem of vacancies that has not been filled. In order for us to be able to give you more funding so that you should get more staff, you need to utilize the few that you have. Because there are funds for these approved vacancies that are supposed to be filled. But at present we don't have that feeling that you people are doing your best to fill those vacancies in order for us then to sit back and say that now that all the vacancies have been filled, let us now look which area that needs to be empowered more. I'm talking about human empowerment. But if you come here with 5, 6, 7% vacancies that has not been filled and expect us then to give you more funding for new vacancies, whereas this present vacancy has not been filled, then it becomes a problem to ourselves as the portfolio committee. But I'll give over to yourself then to respond to all those questions that have been raised by the members so that we can start then with the next program. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. The first question is about our outcome of work in terms of education, relationship among staff members, and also relationship between staff and the management. Because in spite of the upgrading of salaries to the specific, we still lose staff. So, then, as we have indicated, it's a challenge, and I must concede that we're having a very big challenge in that regard. Our conditions of service are your general conditions of service in any government department. We pay them salaries, we pay them overtime, we put policies on overtime, they work overtime, they get bonuses at the end of the financial year when we evaluate them, they qualify. And also in terms of our retention strategy, because we've got a retention policy, there is a question on that one, I'm still going to talk about it. We also give them some cars, those who qualify, which is an additional incentive. I think the problem that was faced with as the ICD, as I've indicated, is the size of the organization. There is no growth in the organization. For instance, I can take one example. The provincial head of Gauteng, who just left as announced now by the ED, said in a closing remarks when she left the ICD that she has been with the ICD for 10 years. She has been a director for 10 years. She couldn't move anywhere because there are no positions in the ICD where she can move to. There's no career growth. And she said, what do you expect me to do? I mean, the people that have been directors with me in 1997 were directors. There are not some of them now are DDGs, some of them are DGs. And she said, as much as I'm committed to ICD, it shows that I'm committed because I stayed for 10 years without getting any promotion. I cannot be staying in one position for 10 years. So these are the realities. The other thing is that our department does not have the same status as other government departments because that has got an effect. I mean, if a department is at DG level, it opens up a little for top senior management. But our department is at DG level. And it has an effect in terms of growth of senior managers. I'm just quoting this one example. And the people at lower levels, as I've indicated in my slides, we don't have a single one of them who left the ICD without having gotten a promotion. All of them left the ICD because they got a promotion in another government department. And I think the committee will remember that the initial number of positions which the ICD was given when we started in 1997 was 535. That is the number of positions which were, after the work study was done, were given to us by DPSA. But then there was no commensurate funding to fund all those posts when we started. That's the reason why we're now still at 248. It's not even half of 535 in 10 years. And this is the song we've been singing every year when we go to the National Treasury, where the structure is approved by government, it's not answered by government, but there is no funding that goes with it. Because if there was funding, we could pull down posts, because those structure posts are in the bank, there, but they're not funded. You can't take them into the structure because there's no money to fund them. So this is the song we're singing every year to the National Treasury. If we can get more funds, posts are there. We don't have a problem with posts, but there's no money to fund them. So basically, conditions of service, honorable member, are just the same as conditions of service in the national government, supported by a government department. The second question says, do you have capacity to deal with your Do you have a retention policy? Why are people running away from the department? The answer is yes. We have a retention policy, which was developed, I think, something like 3-4 years ago. And our retention policy is it's one of the best policies, I should say, that talks to the incentives that our staff would get. I mean, the retention policy talks about things like you are going to be, if you do ABCD, if you do well, you're going to get a reward, those kind of things. The other thing that the retention policy has, and if we benchmark with all retention policies in all government departments, which those departments have got retention policies, because those all government departments have got retention policies, the major problem, again, goes back to career growth. Because in terms of the retention strategy, you must have a succession policy to say, if you stay in this position for this number of years, if Valoy leaves, before Valoy leaves, you must groom you to take up that position. But then my Valoy is not leaving because it doesn't have any way to leave to because there's no position, it can't go up. I'm just using some examples now. You have got a person who's an assistant director and a business director here. Now this assistant director is aspiring to be a business director in that unit because he's qualified in that unit, in that kind of a job. But until another position is created or that position becomes vacant, it becomes difficult to talk of succession policy. There's nothing like that. Because succession policy only operates in a situation, in an environment where people can grow up into the ladder, they can grow. The young people that we take in the organization are not like the old crop of people like ourselves in the old. They want to move very fast. They cannot stay in a position for 2 years, too much for them. They want to grow and get by cars and those kind of things. That's what we're getting. The other person talks about, as the KZN had already taken up the job with the MPA, yes, she has already started the MPA in Joburg. She's already working there. And the other question regarding KZN was the issue of the numbers. We're saying that in terms of the distribution there, we've got 18 of them, 9 females and 9 males, but then in total we've got 20 positions. The reason is because at the close of the financial year, we had 2 vacant positions there. There were 2 vacant positions. So we didn't know whether we were going to fill them by name. We only worked on the numbers which were there when we closed the year. The other person talks to the issue of the fund, of the money that we're saving from the EDC position. Can't you ask or request National Treasury to use the money that is there that we're saving for other things? This is what we've been fighting with the National Treasury, because what we do, I think, because the policy in terms of the CFMA, you cannot use personal funds for any other thing. You need to get special permission from the National Treasury for you to use the funds for something else. You can't use personal for it. You can't use personal to buy furniture or whatever. So I think this is something that maybe our CFO should take up with the National Treasury. But then we're doing it every year. If the money is there, we should buy furniture and things that, and then later we go and talk to the National Treasury. But that's the reason why they are always complaining. It's not like we're not trying anything, but we try by all means to do that. One challenge that I must also consider is about the issue of women, that they do not feature in top management positions. That is very true. We've got very few women in top management positions. The bulk of them are at the lower levels. And it's a challenge that we're going to be working very hard on. Now that we have, in terms of 3 positions now, with the KZN, we've already recommended a woman, and in Gauteng, we're also looking at a woman. We're going to be sitting in service on the 12th, and also the post of legal advisor, which has been vacated by Dr. Sleiman, who's late. We're looking at a woman as well, so to get them up into higher positions, but it's very true that it's quite a challenge to get them at their position. Have you implemented the directive in the abuse of females by putting firewalls, the directive came? Yes, we. These cases that I'm talking about, these ones, the abuse of females. Some of them came from they came over from the 2005-2006 financial year, so they came over here before we implemented the fire, we put the firewalls. But for us, firewalls have been implemented now. So that's the reason why, even this year, we don't have a single case of that, of pornography, nothing in this financial year, because they can't access those things. Are people suspended for a particular period, or just suspended? The suspension comes from a tribunal, from a misconduct hearing. It's a hearing that we put together before suspend people. And then the person who decides on the suspension is the chairperson, who sometimes is not even one of us, somebody from another department, because we try as much as we can to use people from other departments who are going to be objective, you know. So they are the people who impose the sanction. But in terms of the disciplinary code, you cannot suspend a person for more than 3 months without pay. So that is the maximum. So some of them go 3 months depending on the severity of the case. Some of them is 1 month, some of them is 2 months. But the maximum is 3 months. You can't suspend a person for more than 3 months without pay. So it is regulated by government. And then what do you do with people who show signs of burnout and stress? It's a very good question and one question. That's the reason why we've got the ICAS, those service providers. What we're encouraging them, we say to them, whatever problem, because in terms of the ICAS report, there are different reasons why these people are stressed. But the 90% of the cases are because of workload. That's what they're saying. They're saying because there's a lot of workload in the ICD, because we don't stay at home, we're fighting with our wives, our families, and those kind of things. Despite the fact that at interview level, we have indicated this issue to say, this is the condition of the job. In fact, we're even indicating the address before people apply. It's clearly stated that you're going to be working long hours, you're going to be working long weekends, I mean, you're working over weekends, you'll be called at any time, you'll be on standby. We have those things specified in the address, and then they apply. But then when the reality comes in, then definitely because people are people, I mean, so they show signs of stress and burnout. But then the services that we're having with ICANS extend beyond giving us figures only. They also counsel them. The free counseling, they must call those people to counsel them. Some of them are calling them for counseling, but some don't. The other problem is that it is in terms of their policy. It should be a confidential thing. If I'm burnout for whatever reason, well, some of the reasons are family issues. They don't have to disclose it to the management and say, I'm burnout or I'm stressed because of I've got a problem with my wife or whatever. That is confidential. And in terms of the report that we get from ICANS, they don't even indicate that Mr. Baloyi said to us that he has got a problem with his wife. They just give numbers to say in this office where 15 people have a problem with work high load, high workload, 10 people with mental problems. They don't disclose names. But then we're using ICANS to counsel these people, and that service is free, 24 hours. We've even given the card. Each one of them have got, every employee of the ICANS has got a card. They can phone at any time at night to ICANS to be counseled. The other questions, the ED indicates is going to deal with them, but I just want to reflect on the chairperson's last remark, which is very true. The film of expenses. As I've indicated in my presentation, Chair, it's a vicious cycle. I think next time when I come here with your permission, I will come with a slide which will indicate the date on which a vacancy occurred and the date on which it was advertised, the date on which it was filled, so we can be able to deal with to see the period that is involved in certain vacancies. So, because in all fairness, you see, certain positions will take long to fill. For instance, a doctor position. You get a person like the one that we have recommended for KZN. This person is working in another department. That person would set a 1 month notice. So in addition to the month that the post was vacant, when we advertise and interviewed, there's got to be a month of saving notice in that department before the person can come home. So you have been, a minimum of vacancy is in most instances, it's about 2 months after you've advertised. Because the vacancy runs for 2 or 3 weeks, you interview, by the time you interview, it's already the end of the month. If the person accepts, the person says the month of one, not 1 month, so you have got that kind of a period that you have. But then I take your point, type on this, will definitely type on this, fill the vacancy as soon as possible. With the lower ones, we don't take time, it becomes easy. Like I'm talking about class, the lower level ones. We don't take time. And if we get a person who's straight from school, it doesn't take time. If we interview today and then we sign it, they both sign. Next Monday the person starts because there's no notice to be served. So, but I take the point, we're going to be trying very hard to do that. The others, they decide to deal with it. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Now, there's a question which came from Honorable Boy, the question whether do we have capacity to match the police and how do we match them since they are growing in numbers continuously. And our relationship with our staff members and how is it? And how do we relate us to each other, whether it's a question of leadership, which makes them to jump ship continuously, and what is our plan to deal with this matter. Now, I will start by answering that as far as whether do we have capacity to match the police, an honest answer there is we don't, but we do with what we have. We do not simply fold our arms and say, because we don't have so much numbers, therefore we cannot confront what is in front of us. With what we have, the resources we have, we do our best to make sure that we attend and deliver our mandate. In so saying, it's no secret. We all know that the police number are over 100,000. But the ICT staff, all in all, we're talking about 248. And out of that 248, there is administration, there are investigators. We are talking about, at now, about 75 investigators. 75 investigators who are faced with a huge number of over 100,000. I'm not keen to talk about the ratio of what is the ratio with the police in relation to the ratio of the citizens. How many citizens are serviced by one police officer? But I know that it's a better standard compared to other countries. But as far as we are concerned ourselves, if you look at that 75, then if you were to apply the same way this ratio, you will see that we are talking about over 2,000. One investigating officer to about 1,100 in relation to the police. Although we know that it's not all those police officers who are Iran police officers. I mean, when we talk figures and statistics, it will be the correct scenario. And therefore, it's a great challenge indeed. But to say, what can we do? And as an institution, what do we do? The most important thing is a point of departure. It's the recommended structure which was recommended by the DPSA in 1997 when this unit was established. The 535 number of staff. I'm sorry to keep on singing this, but I mean 535 in 1997, today we're talking about 248. More than 10 years, you don't even have half of the recommended number. Indeed, that is a great challenge. I am of the view that if indeed there was a willingness on the part of those people who are holding the purse to fund us, because these posts simply need to be funded because they are there, they are approved. But who release the purse? And people don't release the purse despite that you talk and you write. But I'm happy to say that on the 19th of November, this 2007, we wrote a letter to our political principal, the minister, and the letter was structured in the sense that our minister must support this view that we are saying to his counterpart, Dr. Fraser Mlegeti, that please, can you, with National Treasury,
allow as a point of departure that this 535 be funded. And the minister has, our minister has agreed with our view, and that letter has been approved and it is sent to DPSA. All we're waiting for now is what will be their response, because we really prefer them to have a look to that. Now, the question of whether these people who are always leaving the ICD, the staff in general, whether do they have problems with the leadership, the style, well, up to so far, my office is not in a position to say that I have received any complaint whatsoever directed to me in confidence or directed to our internal hotline, because we do have an internal hotline where people, staff members, are allowed to relate with our senior manager if there is any problems. And the risk management does compile a report which they forward to me, but after so far they haven't picked such things. It's not yet been sent to me, but I'm not saying that perhaps it's not there. It's quite difficult. You never know how people trust and believe that when we say this, how is the other person going to react. It's not an easy thing to establish and control easily, but up to so far I would say I didn't receive such a problem. Now, we as an institution, we are indeed trying very much to make sure that there is stability within the department. And I can say with confidence that as far as I'm concerned, I'm aware that all our provincial heads, those who have left and those who are still with us, they have shown much support to the office of the executive director, to the office, to the top management. I haven't yet received complaints up to so far where people are saying, no, we want to jump ship because of you as a leader or of your deputy as a leader. They haven't yet said that. Now, I think it's important also to deal with a question which has been raised by Honorable Van Dijk. The issue in particular, which is saying that what will happen to the issue of the monitors, and that she's not against what we want to implement, but what will happen to the monitoring function itself, whether there are people, is it going to be done away or we're going to have problems. What we have decided to do is that these monitors are going to be starting on the rank of assistant investigator. We are going to make sure, and that is what we are informing them, that they will also be dealing still with monitoring and domestic violence. But what is most important is that these people, we want them to be trained as investigators, not to be simply concentrating on monitoring alone. We want to empower them that they be in a position to investigate, so that whether investigator is on sick leave or on leave, we must not have a room whereby there will be no delivery because that investigator is no longer there. These monitors must be in a position to do investigation. And in order to empower them, we also approached our political principal, because the Domestic Violence Act itself provides the following, that each and every department of the government must offer any assistance which is needed to the ICD in order for the ICD to discharge its mandate. That is provided for in Chapter 10 of the South African Police Service Act. Therefore, we have brought this to the attention of the minister, that if that is the case, it means the minister can assist us that we talk and agree in writing and in principles with the police management, the police commissioner, that the ICD investigators, those who are entering and those who are already in, must have access to the police academy of investigation or detectives, that they be taken into these courses on certain periods to utilize this institution to take advantage of those highly skilled investigators who are there and who are empowered in the police, to empower also investigators within the ICT, because that is what the law is saying,
And I'm glad to say that our political principal is happy about that, and he has promised that he's going to engage the police management in that issue. So I think these assistant investigators will be more empowered, as well as the investigators working at the moment. Now, the issue of the internal audit. The issue of our internal audit, as it's indicated, when Honorable Kandreti is saying that the Auditor General is not really paying much attention on of their input. Indeed, that is an issue which came to my attention, that the internal audit needs to play a very important role in it, to assist particularly the office of the executive director to see to it that all internal policies, all audits are done properly before the actual audit from the Auditor General. But what I discovered when I moved in there was that the internal audit was reporting directly to the chief financial officer. And that in itself was a serious problem and a flaw, in the sense that the internal audit is expected to audit the finances of an institution. And if they report to the CFO, it means that the situation is compromised. And the auditor is not going to be free to criticize the CFO. And I said, from now on, the internal auditor, you report directly to my office, to the office of the executive director, so that you must be free, because when it comes to the issue of merit performance and so forth, how are you going to criticize the CFO? You can't. I'm happy to say now he's reporting directly to the office of the executive director, and that will add more improvement as far as the quality of their work is concerned. But I have to say again that the salary level, or the scale, yeah, the salary level of this internal audit, it's very low. He is at the level of a deputy director. And surely, a person who must audit a department at the salary of a deputy director, and you audit the department, it's not really good. If you want a person of quality, then you must up the level. You must also up the scale of the internal auditor. At least, if that person is in the level of a chief director, if not a director, it will make a far much more difference, because that person will have authority to speak with the heads of all components, because that person must approach these guys who are both on my side as chief director. And if an assistant director, how does he confront a person of this level and say, hey, I want you to check on this? It can't. And though that's the challenge which I think, in order to take this department to a certain level, the internal auditor must be. The level must go up, and it will assist a lot as far as that is concerned. And lastly, what has been said by the Honorable Chairperson, the issue of the staff retention, the issue that when ICD comes continuously, we are talking about different or varying numbers of vacancy percentage. If it's not low, it's high. If it's not high, it goes down. That is true. It's a concern indeed, Chairperson, because you will see that earlier when we hear for the previous financial year, we spoke about 9% vacancy rate. And now, the financial 2007, we are speaking about 5.2%. Now, hardly now, before the end of this, when I speak about 5.2, it's 12 post-meter vacancy. But up to so far now, when I came here today with my delegate, we are looking at 19 posts which are vacant. So you will see that it indeed is a vicious circle. But the question is, why that? There are many reasons, and these are valid reasons. I'll quickly show an example. We had the problem in SCM, and we were glad that we got funding to establish the data section in SCM. We managed to recruit a person from correctional service, coaching, you know, department coach from each other. This lady joined us, and she was happy with the salary. She worked 1 month. You know, these people keep on applying. She went 1 month, she got the first salary. Before the end of the second month, she says, I'm leaving, I got a better offer. And what do we do? Can I counter offer? There's just no money in the kitty box to counter off. It was so painful, I don't know what to do. The lady is good. But we say, well, what do we do? We wish you good luck. You may give. But that is the issue. And I'm happy that the report which we have asked the Honorable Minister to send to the PPSA, it also includes evaluation of the department as a whole. As far as whether these people who are doing work at the ICD offices, are they really compensated for their work? So we ask the DPSA not only to look at the issue of the 535, but we said, please come and look at ourselves. We are not sure whether these people who are working here are paid accordingly. And I'm looking forward to receive that report, and I think it will take us far.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Member says the responses and additional information that we did not have. It is a good indication of a way forward. Without any waste of time, I know that the following program is one of your core business investigations. So I will give over to whoever will be dealing with investigations, and please, you must do it within 15 minutes, so that I can give more time to members of parliament to deal with the report. Program includes a very important report to this members of parliament. Over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. First, let me also echo the sentiments of my executive director with regards to the appreciation in your support for having assured that we get an increment, you know, for investigators. And I must say, Chairperson, you realize that during my presentation, the output indicates people who are now committed, who are dedicated in terms of their work, given the challenges that we were faced with regarding backlog. And it's all thanks to the fact that their salaries have been upgraded. The first slide, Chairperson, I indicate the performance indicators and targets. This were the performance targets that were pertaining in terms of the 2006 and 7 financial year. I'll move into the next slide, Chairperson, and I decided, Chairperson, given the concerns that were raised by the committee, I need to give a slide on in terms of the backlog that the department has during that particular financial year. And you'll see that this slide indicates the backlog at the end of March 2007, which in total was 6,495 cases. But you'll see that this particular information and the following slide is going to speak to the number of slides in terms of performance that's going to be following. So I want you to keep in mind these two slides, as they have quite a very important relationship in terms of the following slides. The next slide, Chairperson, also shows you what we've had at the end of the financial year in terms of the cases that were only received for the 2006-2007 financial year. At the end of the financial year, we had about 2,471 cases, which also then means that it becomes backlog in this current financial year of 2007-2008. The next slide, Chairperson, indicates the first column, sorry, the second column indicates the number of complaints that were received, which is in respect of that, we received 698. And then in terms of the output, we completed investigations, 1,613 investigations in respect of that. And in terms of criminal offenses, we received 1,787, and we completed 2,251. And in respect of misconduct, we received 2,927, and then completed 3,510. All in all, Chairperson, we received a total number of 5,412 complaints, and we then completed investigations numbering 7,374. As I've indicated, Chairperson, you see that there's an increase in terms of what has been completed in relation to what has been received. But once again, Chairperson, as I indicated, this speaks to the slide that I indicated in the beginning, which showed the number of backlogs that we carried through in that particular financial year. I will not stay long, Chairperson, in terms of the request that I stay within 15 minutes, but this particular slide, Chairperson, you'd recall, if you look at the timelines within which investigations of death and criminal offense are supposed to be finalized, it's 180 days. What then this means is that, Chairperson, complaints that are received from the 1st of April until 30th of September can be finalized or should be finalized within the financial year, which was 2006-2007, by the end of March 2007. And then you have 836 complaints, criminal offenses, the same which were received from April until 31st of September 2006, which also has to be finalized within that period, and shows you what number of those complaints had to be finalized. Looking at that in relation to the targets that have been set. The next slide also shows you in respect of misconduct. And the next slide, Chairperson, will show you now the breakdown in terms of death and in respect of the provinces, Chairperson. What I've done is I've taken total completed deaths in respect of the backlog and in respect of the current financial year. You'll see that Eastern Cape, for instance, finalized 126 cases in respect of their backlog in terms of deaths, while they only finalized 61 in respect of those deaths that were received in the 2006-07 financial year, a total of which then comes to 187, and so forth. And you look at, for instance, KZN finalized 252 in terms of backlog, but 24 in terms of the current financial year. The picture that you see here, Chairperson, shows you that more emphasis has actually been placed on backlog cases. These were cases that have been carried from the other financial years, from 2003, from 2003-04, 04-05, and so forth. And a total, Chairperson, of 1,286 cases of backlog were finalized in respect of death, as opposed to 327 in respect of current financial year, that is 06-07. Then the next slide, Chairperson, indicates the total number in terms of the second column. A total number of those deaths that were received, which is 698. And the third column shows you the completed both the current and the backlog, number of completed cases of deaths, which total 1,613, which translates to 231 in terms of percentages. Then we'll move to the next slide, Chairperson, which speaks to criminal cases that have been completed. Once again, here, Chairperson, I've given a breakdown in terms of those that were backlogged and those that that came from the current financial year. Once again, you have the same picture here where a lot of work has been done in terms of the backlog cases as opposed to the current financial year, 06-07. There was a total of 1,696 cases that were finalized in terms of criminal offenses, as opposed to 555 in respect of the current financial year. A total of 2,251 cases were finalized all in all in terms of the criminal offenses. The next slide, Chairperson, also shows the total number of received criminal cases in the 2006-07 financial year, and then the next column, which is the third column, shows you the completed number of criminal cases, which was 2,251 cases. And again, here you get a breakdown of the various provinces. The next slide, Chairperson, is a picture of misconduct cases which were received, and again here I gave the breakdown in terms of the backlog, which was given attention to and completed in terms of investigation, which totaled 2,684, as opposed to the the completed 826 cases of misconduct which have received in the 2006-07 financial year. And once again, the total there of both current and backlog cases finalized in respect of misconduct is 3,510. The next slide, Chairperson, again, it's the final slide which also shows you the total number of received complaints in respect of misconduct as opposed to those that have been completed and the completion rate, which was about 120%. Now, Chair, there was also a request from ourselves to also highlight what is it when we say that we don't really have sufficient personnel. What is it that we have in terms of backlog? We should break it down in terms of the number of investigators that we have. As at the end of 2006-07 financial year, we had a total number of 71 investigators. A total number of 21 investigators. Currently, it is now in the 07-08 financial year, it is now increased to 75 because of the two satellite offices investigators that have been approved in terms of Mtata and Richards Bay, which now brings it up to 75. So at the end of the 06-07 financial year, we were working with 71 investigators. Now, the workload that is indicated in terms of the second column, Chairperson, shows you that in terms of the total number of 5,869 complaints, dividing it by 71 investigators, it will give you an average of 83 cases that is carried by each investigator. Now, what this means, Chairperson, is that you look at it and say, surely it doesn't look as a lot of cases in terms of workload. Indeed, I agree. And I think also, Chairperson, what we've done was we've gone back to the provinces and exactly did the same exercise that you've done in this committee, where you have taken the number of complaints that have been finalized and divided it by the number of investigators that we had. And when you showed us that actually it meant that at that time, that was the previous financial year, 05-06, that we actually finalized very little workload. And we took that to heart, and we took it to the provinces, and they also realized that indeed, if you put that exercise into the picture, it really shows that there wasn't much output at the time. But you realize that in the 06-07 financial year that we're reporting on, there's been much improvement because people now understand what is it that is expected of them and what is it that we mean when we say that, what translates into output and what does not translate into output. But a few points that I need to raise that we need to also look at when we look at this workload of 83 cases per annum per investigator. We need to recognize, Chairperson, the fact that we operate on a provincial level, which distance counts plays such a critical role in terms of when you have to visit the crime scene, when you have to come back and go back again to the same area, which might be about 400 kilometers, 500 kilometers average, to go and attend the postmortem and to do further investigations. Those are the things that unfortunately play a critical role in terms of eating into the time that would have been more dedicated to investigation. Hence, you have this kind of challenges. But also, Chairperson, given the fact that we had taken quite a number of matters to court for trial purposes, this also played such a critical role and had an effect in terms of other investigators that had been dealing with this matter in court. Chairperson, with the next slide, I felt I needed to refresh the memories of the honorable members here with regards to the investigation workflow. And I felt that, Chairperson, I needed to highlight some of the activities that are involved, for instance, when one is dealing with an investigation of crime. And I took, for instance, an investigation of murder as an example. For instance, when it comes to attending of a crime scene, once the police, if somebody is shot and killed, by members of the police. The police are obliged to notify the ICD, who then have to attend to a crime scene. Now, supposing this crime scene has happened about 2 hours from the provincial office, these two investigators have to drive to this crime scene, and you already talking about 3 hours that has been spent in terms of traveling. Getting to the crime scene, you start having to do combing of the crime scene for the clues and starting to interview witnesses who will be critical in terms of your investigation. That is talking a minimum of between 2 and 6 hours. All in all, just dealing with the attendance of crime scene and the investigation itself of the crime scene, you may be talking about 8 hours that will be gone by the time that you finalize, you move out of that particular crime scene. And you can imagine that this obviously would take a toll in terms of you know, what a person can do within that particular time. Basically, a day is gone at the end of this. Now you have to deal with interviewing of witnesses at the crime scene, which might take 2 to 4 hours. And sometimes some of the persons who are witnesses of the particular crime might not be confident at that point in time to give an interview or to give a statement, which means that you have to go back to that particular scene again to re-interview them and then obtain statements. Then you've got to deal with the issue of collecting and packaging of exhibits, and then taking them to be evaluated by the forensic science laboratory. And then the issue of the attendance of post-mortem, which is also critical in terms of the investigation. And coming out of that, you may find that there is further evidence that comes from the post-mortem, which may require of you as an investigator to go back to the scene to comb for further a lead in terms of that particular matter. And then, of course, you're talking about the updating of the database and reporting of progress on a monthly basis. So, Chairperson, looking at these issues all in all, you would realize that there's quite a number of issues that are involved. But these cases would obviously differ. You'd have some cases which could be finalized, for instance, within a month, where a person, for instance, dies in police custody, maybe on natural causes. All that you'd have to do is go to the scene to ensure that you satisfy yourself as an investigator that indeed there wasn't any foul play, and then subsequently attend to a postmortem. And if the postmortem does confirm that indeed there was this person died of natural causes, that matter is closed and finalized, because there is no need for you to be taking the matter to the DPP and so forth. The next slide, Chairperson, highlights some of the achievements in terms of the convictions that we attained in the financial year. In the first four ones, Chairperson, which relates to corruption and extortion, you realize that there are four of these convictions that were attained. This was attained by the Anti-Corruption Command, which is still at this point in time located at the National Office, but operates in the provinces. The next ones indicates, for instance, Solo and Alice and King Williamstown. These are convictions which are attained in respect of, for instance, for murder, assault, deviation, attempted murder by the province of the Eastern Cape, and so forth. And then also, Chairperson, if you look at the Glenn Gray case, 12/6/2003, it also, I think it's something very good to commend that we had a conviction in respect of a domestic violence where a member has failed to assist the complainant and was found guilty and fined 3,000 rand or 6 months imprisonment. I think this would send a message in terms of the way some of members of the police might be taking their responsibilities in terms of DVA matters. The next one, Chairperson, in the following slide, Tonga Triad, Devon Central, and Tonga again. These are the convictions in respect of murder, perjury, and assault, deviation, culpable homicide, which were attained by the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And the next slide, Chairperson, indicates those that were attained from the province of Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga and the Western Cape. All in all, Chairperson, I need to say that all the provinces have contributed very significantly in terms of finalization of making sure that they take cases to court. Out of a total of 27 cases that were taken to court on trial, 33 of them resulted in convictions, which I've just highlighted, and 44 out of those were then led to acquittals. Now, the challenges, Chairperson, that within phase as a program, still relates to the backlog. But I need to say that, Chairperson, we have put measures in place, and you'd recall that when we came here early in the year, we reported about the business process reengineering that we had put in place, which was trying to look at what are the causes of this particular backlog. And then thereafter, we then came up with strategies to ensure that we address this particular backlog. And I think having seen, Chairperson, in the earlier slides that I've highlighted, that we have indeed made a serious dent in terms of this backlog. And that we are committing ourselves that come the end of this financial year, we should be having very minimal, Chairperson, backlog. And that might only be backlog that results only from this financial year. But going forward, Chairperson, we are looking at ensuring that we finalize, we keep to the timelines, which have now been revised. I spoke of the business process re-engineering, and one of the timelines that has been realigned, Chairperson, is in respect of investigations of deaths which occurred in police custody. And I indicated that there is no point for us to be putting a timeline of 180 days in a case which can be finalized within 30 days, for instance. Because if there isn't any wrongdoing on the part of the police, once the post-mortem has been done and the post-mortem results confirms that the person died of natural causes or of suicide, for instance, there is no point for us to be proceeding with that investigation in terms of making an inquest, because this clearly proves that the members were not liable for the death of this particular person. The other issue, Chairperson, is that we have asked the provinces to come up with plans in terms of how they're going to be dealing with the backlog. And they have put plans in place, and I can assure you that up to now, Chairperson, there has been a concerted effort to ensure that this backlog is being addressed. And even as I speak to you, there was further recommitment when we had our meeting the quota about a month ago, Chairperson, where provincial heads indicated to what extent have they gone in terms of addressing the issue of the backlog. As the EDS indicated, we also assembled a team to assist specifically in those provinces where we found that they had a serious backlog. Mpumalanga is a case in hand, and the reason why Mpumalanga had such a serious backlog, Chairperson, was because they had about three members who left from the investigation unit, who joined other departments, the gambling board, for instance, as investigators. And this obviously had an impact, because out of five investigators, if you lose three investigators, you're only left with two. And that resulted in them experiencing a decline in terms of the output for the financial year. The other challenge, Chairperson, that I needed to highlight is with respect to the anti-corruption command. Once again, Chairperson, I know that we've made a commitment to the committee that once we get the funding, we will be able to take this unit to operate from the provinces. But unfortunately, because we still only have this unit operating with four people, it still has to operate from the national office and only respond when there are complaints of corruption. And as you can see, Chairperson, this unit has spent quite a lot of money in terms of travel and accommodation in trying to investigate complaints of corruption. Specifically, I think they spent no less than 6 months in the province of KwaZulu-Natal dealing with the cases that have indicated that led to the convictions. Not only that, but also the case that I have highlighted to this committee relating to the missing firearms at the Department of the Metropolis Department. And I need to indicate that investigation has been finalized, and we have made recommendations to the DPP. We are basically at this point in time awaiting a decision as to what the DPP is going to be saying. But taking this into consideration, Chairperson, we then approached the National Treasury in September. And one of the options that we put forward to the National Treasury was to then say that given the fact that the anti-corruption command has shown much output in terms of this area of investigating corruption, we would want it to be expanded, Chairperson. And we then made a call that at least if we can have it established, have the anti-corruption command at this point in time, maybe for the next three MTS cycle, if it can be established in three major offices, we will be able to do something. And we can, I think, reduce the number of expenditure in terms of traveling and accommodation. In the course of next year, we made a call to National Treasury that we establish in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, where we have seen that we've been having some serious challenge, especially when it comes to the Durban Metropolitan Police Department in that province. Thank you. That is my presentation, and I hope Chairperson was able to stay within the 15 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much. I know that you tried to stay within your 15 minutes. Otherwise, if I didn't, if you tried, you would have spoken up at 12 o'clock, trying to convince us. Members, that's the report on the investigations program 2. I'm glad myself, Honorable Boy, Honorable Sangetwa, Honorable Mwase, and then Van Wyk. And then we'll take second hand of hands when the body responds. Honorable Boy?
Thank you, Chairperson. Because a huge responsibility to sort me out today. Because I think, reflecting on, you know, the type of figures we use, I like the generalization. Those are more specific. You know, if you give me this one case, and you deal with that, you're not specific. We don't know whether this death occurred, and what type of death are we talking about. Is it natural, police created, as criminals? Now you leave us not knowing exactly at the end of this financial year, which is your biggest mandate, where does the death occur? I have been saying to you day in, day out, you are dealing with a record of human rights of the police. Are you saying with the type of backlog and combined with the current year that there's no police service? Because if you use a figure of about 600 and something, are you accusing the police force? That's what the ICD is investigating. Are you saying to have 600 and something police are involved in that? Are you saying 600 or 200 and something police are involved in domestic violence? You know, you are not clarifying us. You are leaving this journalist with a mouthful of things to chow us, because you are saying to us, there's corrupt policemen. And you're not pinpointing to us, where does this occur? You are literally saying that they can write as they like, because it is upon you to explain to them who is committing this death. Because if you don't, what the National Commission has said to us yesterday and what you are saying is totally contrary. We don't have a healthy police service. And that is very serious. And I don't know if you do understand the seriousness of what you're saying. And that is creating a problem in my mind. Where does the death occur, Chabalala? Give us, is it committed by police, or who is committing this type of death? You know, I'm glad that the chairperson has ruled during this week that you need to be able to interact with the police. And I do hope you give us a sense of how is that working relationship work. You know, the way you are talking about, do you have a register of your own as ICT on the Domestic Violence Act? But, I mean, talking to Sema Wateng yourself, I'm sure Sema Wateng can dispute some of the things that you're talking about when it comes to registering of domestic violence in different police stations. And to say to us it's full, that they have been compliant, that is very shocking that the police have been very compliant. But as you go down in the other reports around the domestic violence, you then say that the seemingly unwillingness and existing self-management which is cut to taking disciplinary steps against the members of violating the law. It's in this particular way. I'm reading 2 and 4, that's what my chairperson says I should do, so that I stick to what I want. So it does confuse me that how do you come and how do you relate to the police? If you, one side will say they're seemingly unwilling, and one side to seem to get so much cooperation to be able to come at a report that deals with domestic violence and we afford the register. How does that happen? How does that we have asked the question of capacity, and it does just happen that you are the person who will show us that you do have capacity, because the acting CEO called it, because he says you seem not to be able to say to us, one, to how many policemen are you dealing with as an investigator? And how do you, I have thought that your report will be able to outline to us that one investigator in a day's time deal with so many policemen, and these are the type of cases that they're dealing with. I can see your time scale that you're outlining, but how many policemen and how many cases are you talking of in a particular day? Would you be able to give us that sense? Because it does confuse us in your outline that time arrangement that they're putting up is fine, but tell us more. How many police and how many people get killed in a cell in a day? I mean, so that we know exactly what you're talking about. This generality of your report doesn't take us anywhere. It does put us into a tremendous pressure to defend ourselves against the public and to defend you, because they are accusing the police. Your job is to monitor the police, and they are accusing them. We don't want to defend the police. They are death occurring in the cell, but explain to us what is exactly going on and where. So that we have a sense of exactly where we are going. You see, your cell visiting, if I read this type of report on this other side. I mean, I've been in the Free State with the chaplain. Not last year, this year, chaplain. And we've been visiting with the ICD. We had to take the ICD from Bloemfontein and take it all away to the Free State. Now you seem to have an easy way of explaining this thing. And under administration, it considered that the distances between Bloemfontein and other stations is hell of a distance. And I mean, people there were telling us directly, ICG people were telling us exactly that those distances have got an impediment. By the time you arrive in Wakwa, where there's a police station and where there's a death, the police have already attended to that particular death. And you haven't yet arrived. The body can lie there for 2 days without the ICD arriving, because the ICD doesn't have capacity to do that. Now, you seem to say to us in this report, this thing is a very easy thing. It doesn't occur in that way. But I'm saying to you, I'm not being told by you this time around, luckily. I'm told by my oversight duty that I've taken into the Orange Free State, where I know for a matter of fact, to go from Bloemfontein, where your concentration is taking place, to arrive in Wakwa, doesn't take you 1 kilometer, it does take you 200-something kilometers. And death is not planned. And death occurs any other time. There could be a car accident that involves a policeman. It doesn't mean that it has been planned by the policeman or been planned by the public, but it does happen. And one time it's a spark of a violence where people started fighting with the police because of a body that was lying on the street. Now, I'm saying your report, sir, with good respect, doesn't talk to those issues. It doesn't make us to be alive to the challenges that are facing the ICD. And that's why nobody can go to Treasury without us and say, Treasury give money to ICD, because ICD is running short. Because there's nothing that speaks to this report. The core function of the ICD is not totally done well. Self visit and whatsoever. I'm just saying it does leave me with a little bit of amazement of how you have outlined and how you have arrived at the type of figures that you're talking about. You're dealing with the backlog, but you're not dealing with that. I mean, you're outlining to us exactly what is going on into the ICD. Who are the ICD people investigating? Is it the police? Is it the public? Who are you helping? I mean, I'm just trying to find out. I still wanted you to the acting CEO, my last sir, in due honor to you. I want you to speak to me, because it seems as if there's a problem of structure, of how we grow that particular structure. I do know that there's a challenge of putting the campaign report in front of you and being able to assist you to augment your structure. You're supposed to speak to me. How far have you gone without our campaign report, and what are the challenges that it will bring into if we authorize them according to the recommendation that they become part of the structure? Will it give you better capacity? But with the way your investigator is outlining, I don't think you will ever have a capacity in the organization to be able to take up this type of challenge. That's why I've been asking the question of capacity. Your report, Chabalala, starts in 2005 with the DVA, 2005 report. And I'm saying it's a very old report. we're supposed to have the reflections 2006-2007. What do you mean by this? What does it imply? It's here. It's in this document. You don't know about it. No, I can easily get it for you. It's here, in this presentation. It's not wrong. No, but say you just talk about the ICD and DBA, domestic violence.
Are you through with your questions? So I should give an explanation.
Yeah. No, I was asking you, it seems not to know where you did.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would like also to echo the same sentiment with Honorable Boy of saying that I'm concerned with Mpumalanga cases. There is no breakdown of where are the deaths occurred. We would like maybe to get a breakdown of whereabouts cases have occurred, because Mpumalanga is close to the second highest in numbers in the cases, the criminal cases and deaths that have occurred. And also, I'm concerned about the three investigators from Mpumalanga also has resigned because you've also, in your presentation, said you had a retention such strategy whereby you are able to retain your staff members, your investigators. And also in some of the cases, there are cases that I know are not reflecting in this report that are from my constituency. We are having one burning case from Polcraft whereby a woman was put in a cell with men whereby that woman was raped. I don't see that case yet. If maybe I can be clarified, because I can agree with Honorable Boy saying that maybe some of these cases are outdated, are very old cases that are reflected here. I'm expecting to see cases 2006-2007 cases. Thanks, Chair.
Second was it you that I recognized? Or was it? Olive.
I don't think so.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm concerned by the investigators' personal welfare. So, maybe I should ask a question which is not in your challenges. I thought it was supposed to be part of your challenges, saying that how many investigators are qualified or are having legal rights as per the Firearms Act to carry firearms, and how if they are not all who are carrying firearms, how many are not without firearms, who are legally employed or who are legally employed but are not legitimate to carry firearms with them because of these people are attending to sometimes police who are having a firearms, who are angry, who have felt fought with their wives and so on. And then interviewing such people, you must also be protected. And I'm tempted to say that on your challenge is also maybe you should have looked at the number of vehicles, whether as a challenge or don't you have a problem of vehicles in these other areas and so on. In police station in the Tshabile, sometimes last year, a woman policeman was shot in a police cell and raped by criminals. Now, in terms of police getting into cells, there are rules that allow them to get into cells and so on. I wonder if I know that you cannot investigate the criminals. But you have to investigate how the police go into the cells without any protection and so on. And I wonder if you have that type of thing. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. Thank
you, Jefferson. Chair, I think these three slides, performance indicators and targets, I think that they were supposed to have another row here because it gives you indicator, target, and it does not tell you anything if those targets have been met. I think it would have given us a good opportunity to know whether the targets are met or not. If not, what assistance do they need? And about trend inspections, I think Nyan is right. If you talk about cells and what is happening in the cells, I think he must think twice, because if you talk about cell inspection to us, that is one of the things that we do very well when we visit police stations. As a result, I see the figures that they are put in these slides and presentation, but during our physical visit to this cell, it does not tally. I'm not going to say because we have not compiled a report as to what happened, and even with our monitoring tool that we use when visiting patients and cell inspection, the answers that we are given when we ask who has visited the cell does not tally with what we are given in this slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think just on the presentation of statistics, I think it is vital that we get a separation of statistics in terms of how you've dealt with your backlog and how you've dealt with the current cases, because we need to measure you also on this financial year. And although it's not this way this year, I think next year's report should reflect that. Jefferson, I'm really worried about, and I agree with the Honourable Boy, I'm very worried, and this is something that we've raised with the ITD 3 or 4 years ago under the previous executive director already. Be careful how you present the deaths that you investigate. Because tomorrow, and you will remember, there was in fact a year that there was a UN report after that, which was based on the fact that you guys didn't present figures correctly. And if we're going to have exactly the same situation this year around. But that being said, I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that, the ITD is an oversight body, and so are we. And if we look at the figures, and you look at Table 8 in the annual report on the circumstances of death, circumstances of death as a result of police action remains high, according to the ITD. Now, they say 60%, and I find it very interesting that they do not include suicide as a result of that, because suicide, and that comes to the issues that that Mr. Moholti and Mr. Boy has raised about cell inspections. Suicide is related to police not taking the actions that they should have taken when they did. So I can't see how you can separate suicide from this as a result of police action. Because if a person can commit suicide within a cell, it means the police didn't follow the proper procedures. And we can tell you that we've came across instances like that, where, for instance, a juvenile is locked up with adults with a school tie around their neck, where we've seen adult males with leather shoelaces inside the cell. But the problem is, sir, that cell inspections by the ICD occurs when we do oversight visits. And I'm not even scared to say that, because I think without contradiction, they visit more cells in 3 days when they come along with us than they do in a month when they're on their own. I've got absolutely no doubt about it. The other thing that I am worried about is the validity of these statistics. And the reason why I say that is we have been in the Eastern Cape during this year, 2 months ago, Chair? 3 months? 2 months ago. And we arrived in Port Elizabeth, and the first thing that we saw, it was about 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night when we arrived. It was late, I know. Posters all over the place. Police officer goes on rampage. Shoots 4 people. Okay, this was one of the instances, I think the head office is aware of that, where the ICD, like the police management in the Eastern Cape, just disappeared. never saw them because they didn't come along, you know, they didn't follow the proper procedures, which is also an interesting issue again, because again, both them and KwaZulu-Natal indicated to us that there were no communication from National about our visit coming, about us coming there, which you also know is a reoccurring problem. So, eventually we visited, as per our program, we visited the ICD office. Where's that office situation? I can't remember. It's no, it's not in Cornwall. Yeah, King Williamstown, yeah. So, this incident took place less than 8 kilometers from the ICD head office. Less than 8 kilometers at the police station. It happened on the Saturday evening. We got to that office on the Tuesday evening. When we questioned them about the circumstances of that case, they didn't know about it. Now, quite frankly, I find that extremely, extremely worrisome. The head of the office didn't know, Stoltz didn't know, over and above the fact that they didn't know about us either. They didn't know who we were and why we were there and what we're doing there. I mean, they really had no idea. And what makes this case worse is that this police officer who went on rampage a year before took a weapon because of jealousy of his wife or his girlfriend or somebody, shot her, and also a detainee. Now, somewhere the police have slipped up with this thing as well as the ICD. This guy should never have had a weapon again, etc., etc., etc. But I find, seriously, if I tell you that Eastern Cape, we were extremely worried about the efficiency of the ICD in Eastern Cape. Extremely worried. If you don't know about the case 8 kilometers from your front door, then you've got serious problems. We found exactly the opposite at KZN, and I must also say that we found that KZN, we thought, were actually doing, under the circumstances, quite a good job. Jefferson, the other question that I want to ask in terms of the investigation of complaints, I want to say that we were the guys that insisted that you lower your target. We're now insisting that you raise them again. After you've addressed this problem, and you can now see that you are actually capable of completing the investigations that do come in front of you, I think we can no longer be satisfied with 30% or 40% or 50%, but that they now raise them to a realistic point as well. See, I just want to get to that specific thing. Yeah, the target is the main issue, but I think it is now necessary that you raise them to a realistic, manageable, acceptable issue. It's very difficult to really interact with this report because and I'm not only talking to the presentation, I'm talking to the annual report itself in terms of program two. Because it doesn't provide us with the necessary information to really establish whether the investigations are going forward or not. And I'm not trying to be difficult or funny or anything like that. We can see from the fact that you have been able to complete that much more investigations this year than the previous years that there have been improvement. No doubt about it. But to me, and we've been saying this all along, the ICD role, your reason for being there. Now, the minister always gets up, your political head, he gets up in parliament and he says, the police alone cannot fight crime. And I think we agree with him 100%. You guys are going to be taken seriously when you start playing your role in making sure that we fight crime. And why do I say this? Because if you can pinpoint, now that's why I say this detail is not talking to anything. If you can pinpoint and you can say, sir, Mr. Minister, Mr. Commissioner, at this station you've got a problem. Because in the past 5 years, we've investigated 7 cases of corruption at this station. We've investigated 10 deaths in custody. We have investigated so many cases or complaints of misconduct. And therefore, we think there's a policing problem here. Because then you start contributing, you're adding value to the billions of rands that we are spending on the police. And I think CEPIS, I think Treasury will take that seriously as well. If the IPT can come forward and say, this is our contribution to the fight against crime. And in general, I would say that, you know, you guys established a research unit against our will. We were not in favor of it. You guys know that. We're not in favor of that centralized anti-corruption command either. You guys know that. And to this extent, you guys haven't convinced us that either of those two were the right things to do. Because if your research unit was serving its purpose as it should, those were the kinds of reports that would have been coming forward from them, saying to this committee, we need to address the following so that we can get better value for money in terms of the performance of SAPS. Because you're not only there to investigate the individual cases, you're there to make a difference. And I think that we would like to see from next year's report as well.
Thank you, Honourable Sunday. Do we have someone else? Because I want to take second page of him. Honourable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think with all what has been said, there's a lot of backlog cases that have been indicated. Definitely, when you talk backlog, it means you are able to go back to those cases and investigate them by near looking or deducting that I can come back to this case. But we are not saying how much of unsolved cases that you have had or have experienced. Because in terms of collecting information and all other things that are needed for you to be able to solve a case, there are a number of things that you need to get, investigation and all other things that you need to take for them to be examined. I didn't hear anything talking to that in this report. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, sir. I would like to know, Chairperson, if they knew about the case that Honorable Van Dijk is talking about of the Eastern Cape, because as she correctly mentioned that they didn't know about it. That case was over the paper, all the papers, but they didn't know about it. I want to know whether were you informed about this? Thank you.
It's obvious they weren't informed, but if the provincial structure of the ICD didn't know about the case, and you can't tell me that they don't read papers, I don't know, but there's no way that they could know while they're in Pretoria, while the people in the Eastern Cape didn't even know about that case. Even the West part on the very same case, when interrogated with the police here about this very same police officer who was not even suspended, who was still carrying a firearm, and then somebody who claimed to be illegal, somebody within the police tells us that there's a difference between to possess a firearm and to own a firearm. You understand? She was saying that there's a difference. No, to possess a firearm is something else. To own a firearm is something else. So this person, we give him the firearm from 7 o'clock up to 4 o'clock because he can't own one, but he can possess one. You know, something like that. So those are some of the things that I think the ICD was supposed to have dealt with. Because that case as a whole was not had, that case has to be transferred to the ICD. Because everybody knew about that case. Even kids from school, they knew about that case. The only people who did not know about that case is the ICD. Believe you me. Only the ICD didn't know about that case. So that's why members of Parliament were saying that we don't understand how the ICD is working. And in order for the ICD to be taken seriously, even by the National Treasurer and by ourselves, they themselves need to take themselves seriously in order for them to be taken seriously. Because, you know, you can do whatsoever you like in Pretoria, but if your provinces are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, then this process is taking us nowhere. Then tomorrow you'll cry when somebody goes to the media and say that you don't need this structure. You see? Because you will say that it's a waste of resources. if you can't do what you are expected to do. Yani, 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 babu, 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 pet. Putu, I tell him, oh, we same lunching. Why couldn't sell a man? That's what I said. You see, that's the problem that we're faced with. Other provinces are doing good. That one we must say. Other provinces are doing good. But we do have those provinces. That are doing, I mean, the Eastern Cape. Members of Parliament travel all the way from with the taxpayers' money, all the way from Cape Town to the Eastern Cape. They didn't know that they were coming. They claim that you did not inform them that they were coming. But even if they didn't know that they were coming, when they heard that members of Parliament are already there, they didn't even bother about finding out why members of Parliament are here. What is it that you can do as the IBC? That's the problem. Sometimes it's not a capacity. It's an attitude. It's an attitude problem that we have. Sometimes really, we can blame the capacity and do all everything that we can do. But I think in some instances, we have a problem of attitude in other provinces. Because provinces like Northern Cape, it's such a vast province. Those people drive 10 hours from Kimberley to Upington. But in most stations that we visited, they were there. And then you go to Eastern Cape, you go to Gauteng, where you get a station within, 5-6 kilometers, and the ICD don't visit those police stations. And then a guy with only 3 investigators in the Northern Cape is able to visit Upington. I mean, it's the last American Africans, man. Yeah. Anjani?
No, Chairperson, in all what we have said, you know, Chambala, we want to do a proper assessment of the policing state in South Africa, how it's standing. I don't know, Chairperson, should you move on and really endorse this type of report? Can you ask another second round for him to do and re-look at this type of report and come back with better figures for us so that you could be able to compare it? So that when the 9 commissioners from 9 provinces are visiting us from ICG, he at least come and outline exactly what is going on. For this report, as I'm saying, Chairperson, it's got very serious indictment against us. Got very serious indictment against us. Got very serious indictment against the police. We need to be able to say, because you are assisting us in monitoring. We need to be able to see if policing improving in South Africa. Police themselves can't tell us that what is their own problem. But with you, who is one of the bodies that is monitoring them, with this type of report, you are leaving the police to have a gap of living on their own life without us being able to convince the public what is the problem, why is the crime rate so much going up in South Africa. Is it lack of capacity on the side of the police? Is it lack of capacity on its own monitoring bodies? You were created with a serious mandate in the back of our minds that you should be supposed to help us to be able to monitor the police. With this type of report, we can't do anything. We can't go to the National Commissioner of the Police and tell him that you are wrong. While they're giving you money to increase the number of police in South Africa, there's hundreds of them that are corrupt. There's hundreds of them that are committing crimes. And it does mean that we are just throwing water into into a hole. Nothing is happening. But with this type of reporting that they've given to us today, I'm really wanting to persuade the chapters and other members, give us a next round without recognizing this particular report. But it's a problem of a report. If we endorse it, it gets on record. And it does become a problem. It's an indictment against the police and the public of South Africa. I just wanted to do that type of pleading and persuasion to the person if you agree. If you don't agree, I'll accept it. But I'm just saying that this report doesn't reflect honestly and honestly the state of things related to the police and related to the mandate of the ICD.
Yeah, thank you. I disagree with you. This is not a death report. It is not a death report. It's only that there are more questions than answers to the report. For instance, on the issue of death in police custody, myself and you understand what does that mean. But the man on the street doesn't understand. You understand? Because previously, we did not understand. We said that police are brutal. They are killing people. But after your explanation last year, I understand 100%. But a person who knows nothing, and then you come across this report, we'll agree that police are brutal, you see? So we just want the report to be simplified and say that if we say that there were 7,366, I'm just making an example, of death in police custody, we want to have the circumstances under which circumstances. That's what we want. But that does not mean that we disregard the report. I'm not disregarding the report. The report is good. We accept the report. And we are not going to say that we're going to do this report for the second time. What we need to have then is that breakdown that we are talking about. We need the breakdown. And then when the 9 provincial heads are coming here on the 9th, because they must also come and account on their activities in the provinces. When they are coming here on the 9th, I would then plead with you, the national management, you also come down to be here in Cape Town, so that some of the issues that you have informed us and I'll go up. And I'm not saying that when you leave here, you call upon those 9 provincial commissioners to Pretoria and you tell them what to tell the portfolio committee and not what to tell the portfolio committee, shabalala. Because I will fight with you. You don't do that. If the portfolio committee says once 9 provincial heads of the ICG in Cape Town, they must come down to Cape Town, and we don't want to victimize those. You know, you were there. I mean, the new acting head was in there. You were there previously. Well, these poor souls couldn't even utter a word because we're here. I will follow the same trend. I'll deal with them separately and then with national separately. After which, then I'll take all of you as well. But please, don't go and tell them what to tell us and what not to tell us. Because by doing so, I'm popular in the committee. And we don't want to reach that. And by so saying, then I would give to Babu Chabalala, Babu Chabalala, just to you don't have to answer the concerns as they came. What I want you to do, I want you to give us a summary of how we are going to better this report in order for us when we meet on the 9th, so that all these issues that have been raised by members can to be addressed by yourself and your management.
Thank you. Yeah, I have noted the concern, and maybe the first thing that I need to highlight, Chairperson, is perhaps I think something that the committee, I don't know, I mean, I cannot direct the committee what the committee will do. The committee ruled that to separate the presentations of problems 2 and 3, and I think that presented a problem, a challenge, in the sense that problem 3, Chairperson, is responsible for giving the statistical breakdown of all the complaints that we have received. If you look at the whole presentation that has been forwarded, you'll realize that the whole breakdown of the statistics, basically, is handled by Program 3, Ms. Clever. And after which, then, I will then speak to how we then have attended to those particular complaints. But in a nutshell, Chairperson, as you have indicated, you realize, going to, for instance, the annual report, which is now in terms of page 7 of the annual, sorry, 57 of the annual report itself. And also, I think it talks about the circumstances of death, yes, which Honorable Van Dijk has spoken about. You realize that we give a breakdown in terms of how the circumstances of this particular death. I know, for instance, Honorable Van Dijk raised the issue of suicide, that it should be actually in terms of, this is basically a death in terms of police action. Yes, I acknowledge that, Honorable Van Dijk, but I also need to say that we've had quite a number of instances where prisoners have killed themselves not using shoelaces or not using belts or ties, but also when they become desperate and use, they cut a piece of a blanket and use that, which is something that becomes a bit unavoidable. But in terms of classification, Chairperson, we then said, although suicide affected, the police have violated regulations which prohibit a person being detained with a belt or with a shoelace and so forth. We cannot necessarily say that this death has been caused by the police. It will be difficult. But we'll investigate the negligence of the police in leaving these shoelaces, in leaving this tie, and so forth. Because the problem is, if we say that this person has caused the suicide itself, was caused by the police, it then inflates the statistics of saying that the police are responsible for causing this death of a person. I think the part that we're looking at in that circumstances is the negligent part the violation of the standing orders, which certainly prohibits police persons from letting prisoners go into the cells with those articles which they can use as a thing. Maybe we need to come to do a further breakdown in terms of the suicide to say this number of suicides were caused, for instance, by this, you know, using of a belt, using of shoelaces. Maybe that will also give that picture and also indicate what action has been taken by the ICD in respect of the responsible police person. Because there you'd look at the person who was in charge of the charge office, the community service center. Because that person has to ensure that a person that goes into the cell does not get taken in there with those articles which would be dangerous on them, you know. And that person needs to then answer questions. And
I think you need to, when you do the further breakdown, explain to us why you differentiate between negligence and suicide, but yet you say there are issues of suicide which relate to negligence. So if you can take that in consideration, because you've got negligence and as a result of police action in the main report, but you don't have a breakdown of suicide where it's negligence. Because, I mean, even a guy that uses a blanket, there should have been cell inspections. The regulations say every now and then, you know. So we, you know, I mean, I don't want to go into detail, but I think I agree. Just give us a breakdown on those and explain to us why you differentiate between suicide and negligence, even though you say that there are cases of suicide where it was negligence. And Jefferson, sorry, if they are going to do that, I think something that we would be very interested in is the case 8% of deaths by the police where it was domestic violence related or after hours shootings because of the attitude of subs towards domestic violence.
Yeah, we are not saying that you do it now. We say that when we prepare the presentation for the 9th, no? Yeah.
As I've indicated, I think the concerns which were raised specifically by Honorable Boy will basically be addressed by the presentation by my colleague. Because of, I think essentially that would have been, yes, would have set the tone in terms of what actually happened. We received this number of complaints. For instance, if you look at death, which is 698, certainly we say that the police did not cause this death. Not all of this, that the police, you know, have had a hand in this person's dying. Because some of them died in natural causes and so forth. And that's why we have to give those kind of breakdowns. But further on, Jefferson, in page 63, for instance, of the report, it gives you the breakdown further of the criminal offenses, the nature of those criminal offenses. And in this particular report as well, it also gives you the a breakdown of circumstances of death, for instance, by per province. I think it's in terms of table 10. Not that particular page 63, but it's something else. What I'm trying to say is that each and every province will get this breakdown in respect of how persons died in police custody and presence of police action. We also have in the annual report flagged notorious stations, for instance. I'll call them notorious because of, I'll say, where, for instance, there have been more than 3 deaths, we have flagged those kind of stations. And this report, the annual report, has also been sent to the police for them to look at, because we believe that from this they should then pay attention as management to say what are some of the problems that lead to this kind of behavior. But unfortunately, you'd also realize that, for instance, Jefferson, that which happens as a result of shooting, where the police are trying to apprehend you know, suspects, that is something that, unfortunately, police get confronted with on a day-to-day basis when they attend to scenes where there's robbery and so forth. And the police have to defend themselves and have to defend members of the public. But again, there we make a reflection in terms of that these particular deaths were caused as a result of, or in terms of incidents where the police were busy trying to execute an arrest and so forth. A question by Honorable Mwate in terms of the issue of personal health. We have, as my colleague Mr. Waro has indicated, we have ICANN, which looks at the welfare of the employees. One of the things that we encourage our employees to do, specifically investigators, is that because of the fact that they are exposed to situations which can be traumatic, for instance, attending crime scenes and so forth and post-mortem, it is important for them to seek professional advices and so forth to get debriefing. But unfortunately, we found that members do not, our own investigators do not utilize that particular process which have put in place, which they don't have to pay for because the ICD has paid for that particular system. Now, in order to circumvent that, what you do is, at the time that these members have to come for training, we then make a joint briefing of all of these members by a qualified psychologist who will then see them and take them through a debriefing session. In respect of the issue of firearms, Chairperson, I need to indicate that, yes, our investigators are exposed to danger. But what we try and do, Chairperson, is that where we have to effect an arrest, we would, for instance, request the station commander to get that particular member that we are looking for to deal with the issue of the arrest. Because if we try to avoid a confrontation, I think you would not want a situation where you see headlines where that a member of the police and the ICD were involved in shooting each other because the other one was resisting arrest. So we try by all means to avoid that situation where we would have to be armed and then confront the policeman who wanted to arrest the policeman. Because if it becomes much easier when the commander would then have to do the arrest on our behalf. And that is part and parcel of the assistance that we're talking about, that the police are obliged in terms of legislation to render some kind of assistance when we want to. But in terms of issuing of firearms, yes, our investigators are entitled to be issued with firearms. We have taken them for training, but I think as you understand, there is an issue. The Firearm Control Act makes provision in terms of when can you issue them with firearms. It's a process which, unfortunately, the police have not wanted to relax when it comes to the ICD. We have to go through the same process as any other person of applying for a certificate of competency and so forth, which makes sense, because we've got to also respect national legislation. So that process is in place in terms of ensuring that our investigators are qualified to be able to be issued with firearms. But again, that will be regulated because we also don't want a situation where our investigators, for instance, we may find them on the wrong side of the law or losing firearms or even using the firearms against their own spouses. The next question, Chairperson, I think it came from Honorable Mahote with regards to the targets. I think we have taken that point into account. We'll ensure that we put in that column, which indicates whether we have met the target or we have not met the target. I think the other question related to services. Once again, can I ask that because of this is an area which relates to my colleague, Ms. Levan, if it can stand down, because I'm not going to be in a position to respond to that one.
Yeah, I want to say that on the issues of self-esteem and the issues and everything, we did that when we did this program,
Yes, Dr. Kwanama. I think there was a question from Honorable Van Vick. I responded to the one with regards to the suicide, but the other question was with regards to how we dealt with the issues of the backlog, the current. Chair Honorable Van Vick, I think what I've done, I've tried to capture, for instance, in terms of the two columns. I will just refer to the slide quickly. Yeah, for instance, if you look at the slides on dead cases completed, I cannot find. I'll have to go back.
You can't find it.
No, I found it. Yes, in terms of, I can't see the slide number, sorry. But that is the slide. If you look at that slide, what I've done is I've tried to capture the one column. The first column is the provinces. The second column indicates the backlog which was the investigation was completed, and then the next one in terms of the current cases, that was 16,207. I'm not so sure whether I basically this answers your concern.
No, I understand that, but I mean, all we say is it would be better quality if we can have your address backlog separate completely, because saying to us that you've reached 260% of your target,
okay. It's
saying to me that we should up your target to 300.
I've noted that, thank you. I think that will be
suicidal. You're committing your own
issues. I realize that. There was a question from, with regard to the Eastern Cape. Again, there, I think it will be difficult to answer. I mean, I think we're embarrassed as head office ourselves in terms of your experiences there. But what I want to say is that we have institutional investigation in terms of what actually happened there. We recommended, because of the provincial head was not in the province, was apparently on leave, if I recall, and he's appointed his deputy to be able to receive members of the portfolio committee. And unfortunately, he alleged that there was miscommunication and so forth. So we said that he should be issued with a warning, and I think that happened. So we took that in a serious light. We were not impressed by the fact that you came there and nobody was able to attend to you. But with regards to the issue of the case that you spoke about, that became an embarrassment, or your city is also an embarrassment to us, that something that happened under your nose, you are not able to know about, which falls within your mandate, I think it's really worrying. And we'll make sure that we revisit that particular issue.
Is this a good case for me?
Your presentation,
whatever presentation it was, wasn't the presentation because they said they didn't know we were coming. But when he spoke to us, it was the provincial head himself.
Yes, I think, Chairperson, there were two visits. There was one visit where the provincial head was not there. I think it was early on in May, where the provincial head wasn't there. I know about that particular one. But then and also another one which happened where the provincial head was
available. There's always something in the you eat the police or you eat ICD, you eat everyone who falls under the there is always something in the extension. Everything is just a mama in the extension. That's what we are there for. We went to Parliament, everybody attended, in Uganda, and Zamba. You know, it's just a thing. There's nothing right in the extension. I think we should really focus on the extension. There's nothing right in the
extension. Just for clarity again, because I mean, I think this is important for way of investigation. The provincial aid was at the visit that we were at. And with the Ibiso, the second one that you're talking about, he wasn't there, but there was representatives. They were representatives, which is fine by us. I mean, we don't necessarily want the aid because we know that there are other duties and they've got to take these. So somebody's lying to you guys. Somebody's lying to you guys. Because, as I said, the provincial aid was there. And the issue is not for us the fact that we were not, they were not there or they didn't come and say hi or whatever. That's not the issue. The issue is that they're not on top of what's happening in their province.
Okay,
you enjoy sitting in the Chabala, you're not through yet.
the final question came from Mpumalanga. I'm also going to say again, in the interest of Mpumalanga, there is a breakdown, and the breakdown is that you see.
On your mind that.
Sorry. The breakdown that you see is in respect of cases that relate to the previous financial year. That is what, those that were received in the previous financial year. You'll also find it in some, in the slide number, that's in page number 57 of the annual report. Yes. And again, the issue of the of obviously the members of investigation that have resigned. We do have, as Mr. Maloy has indicated, we do have retention policies in place. But unfortunately, in certain cases, it's difficult to retain people. If people have just made up their mind that they want to leave because of the better offers out there, there's very little that you can do as management. I think the most important critical thing is only for us to ensure that those positions are get filled within a short space of time. I think generally the rest of the questions, Chairperson, were similar and I've responded to them. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Babu Sabala. Yeah, I think others were comments from members of parliament commenting on your report and also on issues that affect your department that they came across when they are doing their oversight. You are the only structure that can assist them when it comes to the issues of each and every problem when you do oversight, especially on the ICD. You are the people that are supposed to correct what is happening there. We've come then to the end of the meeting. I believe that on the 9th of November, next Friday, you will be coming down again. I'm sure that next time your traveling will be very hard. And especially will try and say that, of course, we have to come to this one more than that. This is not open again. Yeah, but all in all, I think most of the issues that have been